Book of Ephesians, chapter 6, and while you're turning, I know some of you were truck drivers in your younger days, and there was this long line of preachers waiting to get checked in up in heaven. Peter was doing his best to get them checked in. All of a sudden, Peter, he goes back to the end of the line, and he brings this guy up and starts checking him in. And all these preachers start saying, "Hey, wait a minute, we've been out here all day long waiting to get checked into the pearly gates, and you just this guy just gets here and now you're checking him in." And Peter says, he says, "You preachers, you're a dime a dozen. This guy was a truck driver. We don't see too many of them up here." Well, I think I originally heard that with lawyers. But the title of my message this evening, and I know looking over my subjects this week, they've been maybe a little bit negative, but the title of my message is Satan and His Influence in the World. Let's read just a couple of verses. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 11. It says, "Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I ate some watermelon tonight, and sometimes it irritates my throat or something, so it's I feel like I'm talking funny tonight, but hopefully I can get through this. We've talked a little bit this week about Satan, how the flesh is weak, and about the devil. And what I'd like to do tonight is to focus a little bit more on the devil and his influence in this world. Now, we've already said how he is real. He is powerful. He hates God. He is our enemy. And I just kind of get the sense that, and maybe myself included, that we don't really put ourselves on guard against the wiles of the devil. This word wiles is actually the Greek word methodeia, and you see here the word method in there. That is his methods. We might even say his tricks. We're to stand against the tricks of the devil. And then it says in verse 12, we, so that's putting all of us into this category, preachers, Sunday school teachers, every Christian man and woman, boy and girl. It says that we wrestle not, and the idea of wrestling there is a contact sport. And so we actually come in contact with Satan and his demons in our everyday lives. The word principalities there means governments. The word powers refers to those in authority at maybe lower levels of government. The rulers of darkness, this would have to apply to the demon world. And then spiritual wickedness would be the religious realm here on earth. Now, even if I haven't broken these categories up just right, the point is clear, and that is that Satan is able to work in every area of our existence. He is able to exert his influence in every aspect of our lives. I want to turn with me to 2 Corinthians 4:2. And while you're turning there, I will make reference to how Jesus called Satan in two different places the prince of the air. He is the prince of this world. A prince is what? A ruler. And then here in 2 Corinthians 4, verses 3 and 4, if you'd like to read along with me here, it says, "But if our gospel is hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them." And let me just, in passing, tell you that word lost doesn't mean lost wandering in the woods. That word lost, if you have a study Bible, you'll see that it means perishing. It's the very same word. It's not the same I think this is actually a participle in the original language. But when Jesus said they will not perish but have everlasting life in John 3:16, that's what this word lost means. And in 16:11, people understood somebody who is lost is somebody who is perishing. So if our gospel is hid, it is hid to them who are perishing. That is, they're on their way to hell. But now note here that Satan is called the God of this world, the God of this world. The word world there means the present time. That is the activities and the affairs of the present world. He is the God of this age. as this word often means. And in the original, when the Bible was originally written, there wasn't any small letters. If you've ever seen an ancient manuscript, it was all capital letters, no spaces between, no punctuation. And so when they were to read this, I don't think they have the same sense as we do. We read this and, oh yeah, it's got a small G on it. Satan's the god of this world. But I think the emphasis there is that, listen, he has great influence and power in this world. Jesus himself said he is the prince. And that word prince is an archon, a ruler, just like a ruler over a country. And so he is the god of this world. Now my point here is that Satan is called the prince and the god of this world because of his influence, his power, and control in the affairs of this world. And I think a lot of people, maybe even some Christians, have this naive idea of Satan and his demons that, you know, they're not really up to much of anything. Oh, maybe every once in a while they catch somebody by surprise and they maybe stir up a little something here. But listen, he's powerful. He's got a kingdom. I mean, Jesus actually talked of his kingdom. These demons aren't just floating around thinking, let me see now, let me see if I can cause a little havoc here. Listen, they've got a network. Satan and his demons, these are not ignorant, entities. I mean, this is an organized evil power that we're dealing with. And I don't think Satan and his demons hang around the taverns and with the drug pushers and the prostitutes like a lot of people think. Those people are already in bad shape. I think Satan deals with a much higher caliber of people. I think you find Satan in places like Washington, D.C., Moscow, in the Soviet Union, and in religious assemblies. Listen, Satan is a religious being, and he spends his free time working in the religious realm of our country. We won't turn there, but in 2 Corinthians 11, we actually read there either today or yesterday, how that Satan comes as an angel of light, and it is no marvel if his ministers also come as ministers of righteousness. And where are these ministers at? Where are these men and women that Satan calls? Well, they're in all these churches, all these liberal churches, and all these play churches, and all these religious institutions. Most of the time, they don't even use the word church anymore. And we see a lot of this kind of things, you know, ministries and fellowships. Jesus Christ organized a church. And so Satan and his ministers, listen, they're involved in all the denominations, in many Baptist churches, and that kind of thing. But now let's look at some of the things that Satan, that the Bible specifically says that Satan has the power to do. And I am still in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. Let me read that again. The first one is that he has power to blind minds. But if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost, in whom the god of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is in the image of God, should shine unto them. You see, Satan has the power to blind men's minds, that is, so that they're not able to see and comprehend the gospel. Now listen, there is a divine side to salvation, but we're talking about here and now in the human element, the human side of salvation. He has got the power to blind minds, lest the light of the gospel should shine onto them. And so the Bible in many places really presents this thing. It's not just that you're not an elect. That's how a lot of people go, well, you're elect, you're going to heaven. If you're not elect, you're not going to heaven. But that's not the way we're to look at it. That may be a theologically correct doctrine and theologically the right way to look at it, but that's not the way we're to look at it. I mean, we're to look at everybody as somebody who is capable of repenting of their sins and turning to Christ. And in this case, Satan can blind their minds, lest means in order that not. So the result is that they don't comprehend the Savior and the light of the gospel doesn't shine onto them. And it's almost implied that if it hadn't been for Satan's work, they just might have understood the gospel and turned to Christ. And again, if you got this, the doctrine of grace, the doctrines of grace in your mind, and you don't understand the human side of it, you may think I'm preaching heresy, but the Bible presents it that way over and over again. You ever notice how that no matter who dies, they all go to heaven? Doesn't matter how bad somebody was, they're in heaven. I mean, it could be the most rotten person has ever lived, and they're in heaven. Some horrible what do you call these people? You know, these rock people, these rock stars. Well, they're up there entertaining the angels in heaven. Hey, that's deception, is it not? I mean, not even the pagans believe that bad people went to heaven when they died. The Bible says an angel, that Satan comes as an angel of light. You ever hear, or probably everybody has, these near-death experiences? I mean, it's almost the same thing. Not always the same thing, but here it is. The person dies. They're on an operating table or something, or they're in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, and they see themselves floating down this tunnel, and at the end of the tunnel, there's Jesus. They can't really make out who it is, but somebody in a white, glowing, bright white robe, and everybody says it's Jesus. Hey, listen, it looks to me like that's the only angel of light that I know of in the Bible is Satan. And then they ought to be thankful they didn't keep going down that tube to their death, because that's the monster Satan waiting for them to take them and to throw them in the pits of hell. And so Satan is the great deceiver, and he blinds people's minds. Somebody just recently, this made a big splash, wrote this book. I think it might even have been a medical doctor. And he was, he was dead for 30 minutes, and he went to heaven, and he wrote this book. He was on all the talk shows and television shows. And somebody, I think it was maybe Brother Duval who actually read the book. And then somebody asked me about it. I asked Brother Duval, you know anything about that book? He said, yeah. He said, that book doesn't mention Jesus one time. This guy went to heaven and spent, you know, so many hours in heaven, never saw Jesus. I'm going to tell you something. That guy didn't go to heaven, which I don't believe he went to heaven anyways. But if he had gone to heaven, he would have seen Jesus. And so you know that book is just a bunch of malarkey, and I hope that's not a bad word, but I kind of like it. I need to maybe look that word up. If you'll just give me the time here to look at one other verse. This is Luke chapter 8. I actually have 13 of these points, so I don't know how long we're going to be here tonight. In Luke chapter 8 and verse 12, listen to what Jesus says here. This is the parable of the sower and the soils. Listen to what Jesus himself says about this thing. And I think this really shows us a little more about how we are to be looking at lost people. In chapter 8 and verse 12, Jesus says, those by the wayside, okay, where the sower had gone out, are they that hear, then cometh the devil and taketh away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved. Now listen, I understand all the theological doctrines of how people have been chosen, God's elected for the foundation of the world, but the way this plays out in everyday life, listen, everybody is invited to repent and turn to Christ and to be saved. And I don't think there's anything hindering anybody except the fact that they don't want to, or in some cases, Satan, see, the idea here is a seed has been sown on the stony ground here, or the wayside. Satan gets that word, takes it out of their minds, and so they don't think about it anymore, lest they should believe and be saved. I mean, the idea here is if Satan hadn't have done that, they would have believed and they would have been saved. And I think we ought to look at everybody as being real potential for salvation. Instead of thinking, well, now if they're one of the elect, they're going to listen. No, we ought to pray and plead and witness and do everything we can to point people to Christ and to lead them to a saving knowledge of Christ. And so, in both cases, both these verses, it is Satan, or I should say Satan is the reason, the cause that some do not believe. And so he has the power to blind the minds of those who believe not. Secondly, and if you would, Mark chapter 9, a couple of verses here. Maybe we'll just read verse 21 to save some time. But Satan has the power to possess children. Mark chapter 9. And I guess we can read a little bit here in case someone is not familiar with this passage. But in Mark chapter 9 and verse 17. It says, and one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which had a dumb spirit. And whithersoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, the demon, and they could not. He answered him, and saith, O faithful generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him to me. And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him straightway, the spirit tear him. He fell on the ground, wallowed, foaming. And he asked his father, how long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, of a child. Listen, Satan has the power to possess children. Now, I don't know all the ins and outs of how demon possession takes place, but listen, demons can possess children. There is another example in the Bible. Let's just say she's a 16-year-old girl. She is a maiden there in the book of Acts, and she really didn't have the power to predict the future, but certainly Satan knows the evil and certain affairs that are going on, and there's this secret network that, you know, demons pass messages around, and this young maid was able to tell the future. She was making a lot of money for her masters, and that's when Paul and Silas, Paul cast the demon out of that girl. They ended up in prison, and we all know the story. But I think one thing here is that we need to guard our children. You know, I wonder sometimes if it isn't some kind of a demon possession, not a long-term anything, but that would help to explain why so many young people do such horrific things. I mean, I understand how two boys can be fighting out, you know, getting in a fight over a girl, and next thing you know, one of the kids' boys fall down, hits their head, and maybe one of them dies or something. But there's stuff that young people are doing today that, I mean, it's beyond evil. And how do you explain it? And I understand that we're depraved. I mean, we're probably more sinful than we even realize. But I wonder if that doesn't help us to explain a little bit of some of the things that we see. And a lot of parents, by the way, are careless about what they allow their children to read and watch, things on the internet, video games. Listen, I honestly believe that anything with a demonic, vampire stuff, I think that is a doorway for a demon into the heart of a young child's mind, or wherever the demon lies within somebody. And so I think we have to be very careful about what we let our children watch and read and that kind of thing. And I personally think if you've got young children at home, the best thing you can do is read the Bible to them. Sing some Christian hymns. Because something tells me that demons don't want to be around any place where they hear the name of Jesus. They don't want to hear any kind of singing, any kind of nice religious music around. I mean, that's kind of like, nope, I am not going in that house. I'm not going to try to possess those children, because Satan and his demons do not like that. So I think it's important that you sing those Christian lullabies and that kind of thing. Now let's go to the book of Job for our next point. Job chapter 1. So he has the power to blind minds. He has power to possess children. In the book of Job, chapter 1 and verse 6. I wish we had more time to enlarge on some of these points here, but I'm just kind of throwing them out here, and I'm going to start throwing them out even faster when people start doing little signs like they're getting ready to go home. But in Job chapter 1 and verse 6, it says, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect man and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made a hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." Now, verse 12. "And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. Now, this is a scene somewhere, we don't know where it is, somewhere not on earth. We learn that Satan is going about to and fro on the earth. We've already read this week 1 Peter 5:8, where it says to be on guard, be vigilant, because our adversary the devil is like a roaring lion, walking about seeking whom he may devour. We're to be sober and vigilant. And then God in verse 8 brings up Job's name. And as we've already said this week, because some of this my thoughts here have been overlapping, God is a God of testing. He does allow things to come in our lives. I mean, God delights in that. He tests us as individuals. He'll test us as a church, as a corporate body. But in verse 12, when God gives Satan the permission to do whatever he wants to Job, except taking his life, he says, "Everything is in thy power." Satan has power. Listen, he was created that way, obviously. I mean, he has got power. Satan is powerful. And everything that he does to Job and in Job's life, he is doing it by his own power. So number three, Satan has the power to influence and move groups of men. Look here in verse 13. It says, "And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were plowing, the mules feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped to tell thee." And then it goes on to say another episode where the Chaldeans come. Hey, Satan has the power to move and to influence groups of men. Now, how does he do that? Well, I don't know, but he's got that power. God has just said, "Satan, Job and anything in Job's life is in your power." The first thing Satan does, there's some of these marauding groups. I don't think these are large armies of people, but certainly little bands of outlaws, we might think of them as. And somehow he gets them all stirred up and says, "Hey, I heard about there's a farm over there. Job, let's go down there and raid his farm." And so the Sabaeans come in. A little bit later than that, the Chaldeans come in, and the servant comes in and tells Job what has happened. Now, I believe this gives us maybe a little insight as to why there's so many wars and fighting. Now, I know that there's people that are lusting or lustful for power and that kind of thing. But, you know, What human being would just start a war? I mean, listen, life is tough enough. Life would be a little better if there wasn't so many wars and fighting and bloodshed and killing and that kind of thing. But so you know, what happens? I mean, obviously, Satan's got this power. He comes down to this dictator over here and says, "You know what? You ought to go down there and start a war with your neighbor. Start a war with Canada. Start, you know." And so you wonder if this isn't maybe one way to account for all the wars that we have seen down through the years. Because, I mean, it looks to me like if I was a dictator, even of a small nation, I ought to be concerned about my people, about trying to raise their status and the economic things of the country. But, everybody's always wanting to start a war. Start a war here, start a war there. And so I think this may give us a little insight into that. Well, another thing, this would be number four, Satan has the power to bring about supernatural phenomena. Look here in verse 16. It says, "While he was speaking, there came also another, and said, the fire of God is fallen from heaven, and hath burned up the sheep, and the servants, and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." Now I'm calling this a supernatural phenomena. Now the servant says, the fire of God. Well, this wasn't God, the creator of heaven and earth. This was the God of this world. But Satan has the power to do that. Just somehow cause fire and brimstone or some kind of supernatural fire comes down out of heaven. He's got a bunch of sheep grazing in the field, and they're all killed. They're all consumed. And again, I think this is just the record of the servant telling to Job what he thought. And so, Satan has the power to do this. And we know that over in the book of Revelation, which if we had more time, we could read. Revelation 13:3. We know that one of the beasts, in support of the Antichrist, he also brings down fire from heaven, to help deceive the nations that everybody would bow and worship the Antichrist. Well, number five, Satan has the power to bring about natural phenomena. And look here in verse 18 of our text. It says, "While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee." Now, a great wind here, I think we could just associate that with a tornado. Here's Job's children having some kind of a get-together, a tornado comes, a great wind comes out of somewhere and catches them all off guard, and all 10 of his children are dead. Now, I think the Bible's quite clear that God ultimately controls all the forces of nature, and sometimes he does use those forces of nature to bring judgment, but there are times that he allows Satan to do as he pleases. And it looks to me that Satan has pretty much been given free rein on this earth. I mean, these last days in which we're living in. And so Satan's got the power to bring about what we call natural phenomena. Tornadoes, storms, hurricanes and things like that. I think we can at least make some analogy. We're not saying that every storm, every tornado is caused by Satan, but he certainly has that power to do that. You know, sometimes when there is a horrible storm, people say, because they'll say to me, well, preacher, you know, if your God is so good, why would he let that storm come and all these people die? I said, well, how do you know it was God? And I'll tell them the story in the Bible. Satan's got the power to bring about a storm. Killed 10 young people. Obviously they weren't married and have any children. These are 10 young people that Satan had the power to kill. I say it's the God of this world. You know when Katrina hit, I'm only on point 5 here. I'm going to have to speed this up a little bit. Actually I have 20 points, but I pared it down to 13 for tonight. And there might even be more about what Satan can do than I even know of. But everybody was saying, I remember this announcer was standing on the front steps of a Baptist church. And he says, you know what? These people are saying this is God's judgment, you know, on Mississippi and all the waterfront there. Look at that. How could he do this to these people? And it's like, wait a minute. Why does it always got to be an either or? Why can't it be judgment for the wicked and a test for the righteous? I mean, that's how God works. And when something bad happens, listen, if you're righteous and you know you're living right, well, then you know that's a test that God is putting you through. Something bad happens to you, you have an accident or some kind of whatever, and you know you're not living right, well, you better start thinking about getting right, because that is God talking to you about you getting your life right. And so it doesn't always have to be either or. Many times it's both. It's a test for the good people, for God's people, and it is punishment for the wicked. Well, number 6, Satan has the power to inflict physical illness and disease. We won't read those verses for time's sake. Everybody knows what happened to Job. He broke out in boils. Remember, Satan went back, talked to God some more, and said, okay, you can touch his body, but you can't take his life. And he breaks out in these boils, and if you've ever read the book of Job, you know that his skin turned black. He was sickly. Everybody was afraid of him. Job talks about the little children making fun of him. The little children wouldn't come around because he was black. He was shrivelly. He just shriveled up to nothing but skin and bones. And so, how did that happen? Well, Satan's got the power to alter the chemistry of the physiology of the human body and bring about sickness. I mean, unless he carries around some kind of boil in his pocket and put it on Job, but he's got that power. He has the power to inflict physical illness. And we won't turn there, but in Luke chapter 13, we brought this lady up the other day, said that she had a spirit of infirmity. That is an evil spirit, a demonic spirit that brought about an infirmity. She was bowed down like this for 18 years. She couldn't raise up. And when Jesus healed her on the Sabbath day, that's when all the the ruler of the synagogue was all upset. But Jesus makes it very clear that it was Satan. Because he says, should not this lady, who was a daughter of Abraham, be loosed from her bond? Or I forget how that went, and that's why I should have read it, but we don't have time. Now, I am not saying that all illness is caused by Satan. Certainly, we all get sick. The body breaks down. We wear out, and we have problems and things. But listen, he is able to inflict disease on people. And I think in the case of this lady, Luke being a physician, I mean, he could distinguish between something that was a real illness and, or in this case, Jesus speaking, this lady, it was a demonic spirit that had somehow caused this ailment that she had. Now, if you ask the question, well, can a child of God be inflicted with the disease by Satan? Well, the answer to that is yes. We just read Job. I mean, if you're going to say Job's not a Christian man, God allowed Satan to touch him and inflict him with a physical illness. And again, that lady in Luke chapter 12 that we just referenced, listen, Jesus calls her a daughter of Abraham. She wasn't just a Jewish woman, she was a daughter of Abraham. And I take that to be, this was a genuine, believing Jewish woman, a saved woman. And so, Abraham being the father of all who believe. So I take that she was a genuine Christian. Now, I wish we had time to talk about that lady because she was in church when that happened. And I think she was probably very happy that she went to the synagogue that day because Jesus just happened to be there. And when we miss church, Now, I know sometimes we're sick, and if you got a fever of 105, you don't need to be giving it to me, coming to church and giving me whatever you have. But I tell you, we ought to make every effort to be in church. Because when you miss church, you miss a sermon, you miss a Sunday school lesson, you may miss something that could change your life. There, I've gone to church, and it's like I've heard something that was life-changing. I mean, just one little thought, one little verse, that's like, oh, wow, now I know what to do here, how to deal with this. And I think too often when we miss so much church because we've got to put a little effort into doing that. It's not easy to get up every time, every Wednesday night or whatever. But I think a lot of times people are going to get to heaven and say, well, Lord, I don't know why I was so weak. I don't know why I was so unfruitful. Well, yeah, but listen, if you would have gone to church on March 25th, 2013, you would have heard something that would have helped you been a better father or a better mother, a less selfish person. And so it is so important that we do not miss church. Well, number 7, Satan has the power to inflict mental illness. We won't turn there, but everybody knows of the demonic man at Gadara, who had a number of demons. And we would read there in verse 15 of Mark chapter 5 that he was sitting and in his right mind. You see, Satan has the power to inflict mental illness. Now, I'm not saying that all mental illness is the cause of Satan, because our minds are like any other part. I mean, chemicals just don't get produced right, and things start happening, and we can sometimes be in pretty bad shape mentally. But there are some people who have mental problems, and the result is from Satan. And so I think we have to be careful that we guard our minds. I think too often we read things we ought not to be reading. We're thinking about things, especially anything that has to do with evil, the demonic world. I think that's an open channel for Satan and his influence. And certainly we've already mentioned this thing about young people. Well, number 8, Satan has the power to tempt and to seduce us to evil. We won't turn there, although this would be a good place to turn. Matthew chapter 4, and that is the temptation of Jesus by Satan. But Satan has the power to tempt and to seduce us to do evil, to do things that are contrary to the will of God. What is the classic example in the Bible of that kind of a temptation? Book of Genesis chapter 3 with Eve. I mean, he was slick, was he not? I mean, Eve was no match for Satan. And next thing you know, she's eating the forbidden fruit and giving it to her husband. There in Matthew chapter 4, he is called the tempter. That's one of his nicknames. He is the tempter. And he tried all these things to get Jesus to succumb to his temptation. And of course, we all know the story, how Jesus combated each temptation with the Word of God. And I like Hebrews 4:15. I've got it written down here. It says, "For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but in all points tempted, like as we are, yet without sin." And so, you know, when you get confronted with a temptation, you're going to be. Listen, if you're never confronted with any kind of temptation in life, man, I don't know what to say. I mean, you might want to come talk to me, because you might not even be a real person. Because listen, you might just be an angel. Now, angels can't be tempted anymore, at least not the good ones. Everybody, I mean, life is full of temptation. You get tempted to do this, tempted to do that. I mean, it's not all big things, robbing banks and that kind of thing. But temptations come our way all the time. And so we know that Jesus was tempted in all points like as we, but without sin. We've already read this week in 1 Timothy 4:1 that there would be seducing spirits coming about in the latter days and leading us into doctrinal error. Number 9, Satan has the power to influence our thinking. And let's turn to 1 Chronicles 21, just a couple of verses here. 1 Chronicles chapter 21, and I alluded to this somewhere during the week. But 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 1. It says, "And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. And David said to Joab and to the rulers of the people, 'Go number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan, and bring me the number of them to me, that I may know it.' And Joab answered, 'The Lord make his people 100 times so many more as they be. But, my lord the king, are they not all my lord's servants? Why then doth my Lord require this thing? Why will he be a cause of trespass to Israel? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Wherefore, Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem. See, Satan has the power to influence our thinking. Now, I don't believe a Christian can be possessed in that. And, well, by the way, you know, the Bible doesn't even use that same, you know, we say that Christians can be oppressed, but they can't be possessed. The Bible never uses that terminology, but we don't have time to get into that. That would take a little doing, and I might not even convince you on what I think on that. But here, obviously, I don't know how this works, but somehow Satan got David. It says he provoked David, somehow influenced him to do something that was going to bring a lot of problems into David's life. Again, this is not demonic or satanic possession, but in some way, Satan moved on David and influenced him to do something that was very, very wrong. And even Joab, and Joab wasn't the best man that ever lived, even Joab knew this was not a good thing to do. We could read over in Matthew 16, where Jesus accuses Peter of having been influenced by Satan, and actually tells Peter, "Get thee hence, Satan." And then over in Acts chapter 5, with Ananias and Sapphira. And what I think is interesting in that one is how Peter says to Ananias, "Why hath Satan filled thine heart to lie against the Holy Spirit?" And that word "filled thine heart" is the very same word that's used of the Holy Spirit that fills our heart, where it says, "Be ye filled with the Spirit." That same word is what Peter, the same word that Peter uses as to what the Satan did in Ananias and Sapphira's life, to fill their mind and into doing this little tricky thing they were doing to get make everybody think, oh, they're so dedicated. They gave this great big offering, and they really didn't give as much as they claimed that they were giving. Well, number 10, Satan has the power to grant fame and fortune to his followers. I'm going to read from Luke chapter 4, and just one verse here. We could read the whole story. And I tell you something, now this really explains a lot of what we see today. With wicked people prospering, why doth the wicked prosper? Well, because Satan has the power to bless the wicked, his followers, with fame and fortune. Just one verse here. You can go back and read the context. Luke chapter 4 and verse 6. Well, let's start in verse 5. It says, "And the devil, taking him up into an high mountain, showed unto him," that's Jesus, "all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, all this power," this authority to rule over, to be a one world ruler, "will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it." You see, he is the God of this world. Jesus took this as a serious statement. He didn't say, "Satan, you're just blood. You know, you don't have all that power." Yes, he does. It says, "All this power I'll give you. I'll make you a world ruler, Jesus. Just got to bow down and worship me. Because this has been delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it." And again, I think this tells us a little bit about Satan's power. He's got the power to give fame and fortune, power to rule over this country, that country, different political positions around the world, because it has basically been delivered on him. Now, God can stop Satan on a dime, but I think we're living in a time where it looks just like Satan and his demons, boy, they've just about been given free reign. And we know that's what's going to happen leading up to the coming of the Antichrist, who then will have a complete reign here on this planet. And so, that number 10, he has the power to grant fame and fortune to his followers. Satan has the ability, or the power, to grant the ability to perform miracles to others. Let's read that very quickly here in 2 Thessalonians, because I think we're going to be seeing more and more of this. You know, a lot of this stuff that we're seeing and hearing about, because I don't watch a lot of that religious programming, let me get got my notes here. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and let's in verse 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and beginning in verse 3. He says, "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing that he is God. Remember ye not that when I was with you, I told you these things, and now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. And then it goes on to say, let's just drop down to verse 9, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And so here it is, the coming of the Antichrist is going to be, there'll be these power, all power, signs, and lying wonders. A lying wonder is a wonder that, well, a wonder is something you wonder at. Wow, how did he do that? And a lying means to deceive. So these are deceiving wonders. When the Antichrist comes and this whole system, the beast, he's doing these miracles, they're going to deceive people into thinking that the Antichrist really is the long-awaited Messiah of the Jews, the Messiah of the Christians, and the Messiah of the Muslims. And so he's got this power to grant other people the power to perform miracles, because that's what he is doing here. It is Satan that is behind the working of the Antichrist and the beasts. Of course, we know the story of Pharaoh's magicians, how they were pretty much copying all the miracles of Moses. And so we understand not everything we see is hocus pocus. Been a lot of that hocus pocus. You know, these faith healers, they've gone from city to city and following behind. There's about 25 people with crutches and bandages, and they go in the auditorium, and here's, you know, it's all planned, coming down their crutches, and you know, the minister throws the crutches away, and I'm healed. And a lot of those people are in jail right now for doing that kind of thing. But listen, we're going to be seeing things that's not going to be hocus pocus. We're going to be seeing Satan, as God allows him to do more miracles, we're going to be seeing things that you are not going to be able to explain. These are going to be things that are truly miraculous, but it's not going to be God doing it, but the God of this world. Satan is able to take captive the lost. This is number 12. Take captive the lost at his will. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24, it tells us that, you know, if you are not saved, you are really in dangerous territory. In fact, if you want to read that, I see several people turning there. I'm just a page away. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 24 says, and the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure would give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will. Now, we do believe that if you're in a Christian home, your parents sanctify the children, sometime if you're married to somebody who is a Christian, I think they sanctify the lost person. But people who are lost, they have no idea that they are just totally open prey, open game for Satan. They can take the lost captive at their will. You see that with Judas Iscariot, did you not? All of a sudden, you're reading through the gospel and it says, Satan entered Judas. And Judas goes and does these horrible things. Number 13, and this is the last one, Satan has the power of death. Hebrews chapter 2, and let me just read that one verse here. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 14. Book of Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 14. It says, for as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, and that is the devil. Satan has the power of death. Now I know that Satan can't take anybody's life that God does not allow him to. But I think we have to be careful that we don't diminish. You know, we are kind of Baptists because we believe in the doctrines of grace, the sovereignty of God. And sometimes I think we don't realize the real impact of what we're dealing with. Yeah, Satan can't do anything to me unless God. But wait a minute, no, but we're in a battle ourselves. We are 100% responsible for our lives and our actions. And so I think we have to realize that Listen, he is powerful. And a lot of times you say, well, why would somebody die this way? Well, God may allow Satan to take so many souls in a night. And who knows who and why Satan would choose certain souls. And so that's why if you're lost, number one, you don't need to be putting this thing off of salvation. If you're not saved, you ought not to go to bed tonight to say, Lord, save me. Have mercy on me. And let me say this too. I believe if you are genuinely seeking the Lord, I don't think the Lord will let anybody die and go to hell who is genuinely seeking to save that. So he may not be ready to save you, but I just don't believe that the Lord would ever let anybody who truly desires to be saved would let them go. Now, we're just going to close with a couple more statements. The good news. I got some good news. The good news is that Satan is going to soon be cast into the lake of fire to be tormented forever and ever. Revelation 20:20. We know that after the 1,000-year reign, he's let loose from the abyss, the bottomless pit, and he is cast into the lake of fire where he will be there and burn for all eternity. And as Christians, we don't desire or take any delight in anybody dying lost and going to heaven. But in the case of Satan, listen, if anybody deserves hell, it is Satan. In the book of James chapter 4 verses 6 to 8, it tells us to resist the devil and he will flee from us. So you got to put up a fight. Now again, we don't fight Satan in the flesh, but you got to resist the devil. You got to put up a fight. You got to determine you're going to walk circumspectly and that you will resist the devil. And of course, we know we are to watch and pray. 1 Peter chapter 5 also tells us that we need to resist the devil. Now, I will close with this. Matthew chapter 25. And a warning to the lost here. In the Gospel of Matthew chapter 25. And verse 41. Listen to what it says here about hell. Matthew 25 and verse 41. It says, then shall he say, and this is a scene at the final judgment at the end. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. You see, hell was originally made for the devil and the angels that followed him in the fall of Lucifer. But you know what? Nobody has to go there. This is a scene where people have been judged and they're going to be cast into the lake of fire, what we think of as, are often referred to generally as hell. But it was created for the devil. It was never created for human beings. And you don't have to go there. If you are lost, if you can give your life to Christ, you can, number one, it starts off by you got to be willing to forsake whatever is wicked in your life. Maybe it's not real wicked, but you got to be willing to turn from whatever is worldly in this life and say, yes, I'll give it all up. If I got to quit drinking coffee to be saved, I'll do it. And then you got to turn to Christ and embrace Christ. He's the bread of life. He's the water of life. And all you have to do is partake of Christ by faith, believing and trusting in Him. And when you do that, the very moment you do that, you'll know it and you will be eternally saved. And so if there is someone here who is lost tonight, may God help you before this night, this day is over with, to just give your life to Christ, surrender your life to Christ, and to know the joy of being saved, to have God's protection, not to be part of this free game of the lost for Satan. And so we do need to beware of Satan. There's other things that we could have. He oppresses people. There's a verse there in the book of Acts that talks about he went about oppressing people. And so we know certainly there are people that are oppressed by Satan. So there's other things. But certainly, listen, we are in a real battle. And we don't need to let our guard down, because when we let our guard down, that's when he's going to get us. So may the Lord help us to be on our guard against the wiles of the devil. Brother Reynolds.